'Tis the season to be jolly and joyous and giving, guys. It's the holiday season. And please show your support this holiday season by supporting our lovely podcast.
Yeah, you could support us by donating today to our GoFundMe page. Mm-hmm. And you can find the links on our show notes. You'll find links on our Facebook pages. You could also find links on our Instagram. The link will be in the bio.
Mm-hmm. We are winter babies too, so this will be a limited time offer from my birthday of December 6th.
Through January 17th, my birthday.
Yes, so our birthdays, Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Epiphany, King Festivus.
You know, whatever you celebrate.
Yes. If you've enjoyed our podcast and you're a listener and you want to help us out with getting maybe some better equipment, just to give you guys overall better quality episodes, we would really appreciate it this wonderful holiday season. All right, guys. Now, 'tis the season to be jolly and joyous and giving, guys. It's the holiday season. And please show your support this holiday season by supporting our lovely podcast.
Yeah, you could support us by donating today to our GoFundMe page. Mm-hmm. And you can find the links on our show notes. You'll find links on our Facebook pages. You could also find links on our Instagram. The link will be in the bio.
Mm-hmm. We are winter babies too, so this will be a limited time offer from my birthday of December 6th.
Through January 17th, my birthday.
Yes, so our birthdays, Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Epiphany, King Festivus.
You know, whatever you celebrate.
Yes. If you've enjoyed our podcast and you're a listener and you want to help us out with getting maybe some better equipment, just to give you guys overall better quality episodes, we would really appreciate it this wonderful holiday season. All right, guys, now back to the show. Hey guys, happy holidays.
Happy holidays, everybody.
The holidays, are they getting the best of you? Because they're kind of getting the best of us with shopping and with wrapping and with working and with tapping, just all the stuff that we're doing. We're a little overwhelmed.
Yeah, you know what's more overwhelming? I haven't done any of that. That's the most overwhelming part.
You're not supposed to admit that on the show.
I have just between work and wedding planning, like things are getting rough.
It's a special time right now, so we are going to do something a little bit different today. We're going to give you a mini-sode. We have some news that we want to talk about, and then we're going to do something a little bit different. So before we get into the little different part, let's discuss some news. Eddie Z, our beloved producer, take it away.
Okay, so it was just released this Monday. The trailer dropped for Ghostbuster Afterlife.
Directed by Jason Reitman, the son of Ivan Reitman, the original director, right?
Correct.
And writer. Yes.
Yeah. Who, as you remember, we did talk about this Ghostbusters, original Ghostbusters and the remake, which is now renamed to Ghostbusters Answer the Call.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Reboot.
The reboot.
Nah. Remake? Well, was it a remake? Because it wasn't same. Right. It's a reboot.
Reboot, yes.
Yeah, it's a reboot. We already covered Ghostbusters, so I guess we'll be doing our first ever revival of an episode.
It's interesting, right? Like, yeah. I was actually just thinking about that on the car, right? It's just like, how do we hit, like, do we just replay the chunk of the episode and then just, like, do a new take? Or do we just have to, like, talk about everything now?
I don't know.
Taking this into, so we'll figure it out, guys.
Yeah, and some audience input would be appreciated, too. Yeah,
let us know how you think we should handle this.
So, my first thoughts after watching this trailer are kind of, surprised that it's a brand new original film. I didn't think that Ghostbuster fans would want that. There's not really any inkling of Bill other than his voice, or Dan Aykroyd, or Sigourney Weaver. Some hints to there's their traps and there's their gear and there's the car, but then other than that, it seems like a completely original film.
Despite the fact that we know, like, from production that they are going to be in it.
They're going to be in it. They're going to make cameos and be part of.
So they're going to make including cameos.
They've also promised actually the four of them. So not even, I don't think it's just that's
no,
I don't
wait
know.
A minute. One of them died.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know how you introduce Harold Ramis.
Yeah, you
probably whatever CGI him. Or holy maybe shit. It was like an old video they, you know, that they'll find.
Huh. Maybe he like filmed himself. Like he's just like, my days are numbered, but this movie will get made one day.
Yeah.
My son, this is your legacy, please continue.
So I'm a little surprised because it's taking like that course. It's either like some of these films that come out that are revivals of these properties are either continuations or kind of their own offshoot reboot. But a lot of them also take the templates of the originals, which this one isn't doing. This no, one does, has a brand new template.
The interesting thing is about this one is there is going to be a lot of callbacks to the original movie. We have the idea that the big bad Gozer is going to come back.
Yeah.
For this, we have the Terror Dogs, as you saw. So you have the Terror Dogs,
terrifying.
Which were the, and that was played by Sigourney Weaver and
Rick Moranis. Oh my God, is he coming back?
So, I hope so. Right. I mean,
that'd be great.
It's questionable because, you know, he left that whole Hollywood.
Yeah, he left acting for.
Why did he leave Hollywood? Does anyone know?
I'm sure he was over the depravity.
Oh, what? That's like the best part.
So the interesting thing, the little girl Phoebe is going through the stuff, you know, she sees her uniforms and there's only four uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, in Ghostbusters 2. We get introduced to the fifth Ghostbuster.
Played by Rick Moranis.
Probably not. It will just be the original four.
So we wonder, I'm wondering, are they going to ignore Ghostbusters 2, like the events that happen in that, just kind of like take it from that timeline of the first movie, picking it up from there.
Interesting.
We've seen it happen in the past before, so.
We have.
I mean, literally a lot of the movies that we have been covering. Not a lot, but. We've had two significant properties in the Halloween and
Terminator.
Thank you.
Yeah, Terminator.
So it's not unheard of.
And once again, we have Finn Wolfhard in this type of movie, supernatural, Stranger Thing-ish feel to it. So I think he's going to add that element where it's, when I saw this, I'm not thinking goofy comedy Ghostbuster. I'm thinking it's a little bit serious. It's going to be a little more frightening.
Yeah.
But it's definitely too. You have this sense of it's also too about family, mm-hmm. to the element of a single mom raising two kids, and this also the shadow of the past, which becomes probably an opportunity for this generation to take on the legacy.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's clearly what this is also about. They're trying to pass the torch. I feel like.
I mean, we can't. I try not to judge movies anymore by their trailers because the trailer can make a movie look awesome. Yeah. But here's the thing. Just from the trailer alone, though, this movie does look like it's very different.
Yes.
And it has like a whole different feel. It has like cool vibes that I'm digging. The only thing that I'm kind of, and this might just be my new mindset, where it's just like this itself could have probably worked as its own story. And didn't need the Ghostbusters moniker attached to it.
That's also what I got.
I mean, this is kind of, it feels like kind of Reitman is kind of just like, you know.
Giving it his own flair, which is good.
I think, I just think he's just like kind of living off his dad's coattails there. Like the legacy, you know what I mean?
No offense, I
haven't seen the movie, I can't say, but I'm just saying. It's just like, is right now the vibe that I'm getting.
Well, this is the same director as Up in the Air. He did Juno, did he not?
Did he? Oh, I don't know. I don't know who he is. But he did Juno, that's a superb movie that I do like.
He does like more like...
Indie quirky?
Yeah, indie quirky
films. Yeah, because Up in the Air was one with George Clooney.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So definitely a completely different vibe. So he's doing something as a nod to his father and his father's legacy, but with his own nepotism is strong here.
So I'm going to actually take that back, because he is actually, as a director and a storyteller, he is kind of, he does have his own legacy that he's built. Yes. I don't know, with the whole kerfuffle that happened with the previous Ghostbusters, right? Like, I don't know. I mean, the viewer response has been kind of high, though. Like, viewers have been amped up for this one. Yeah. It's like people are like jizzing their pants like when they saw E.T. in Thanksgiving. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, so the line was it that there hasn't been a ghost sighting in 30 years? 30 years. So that's 1989 when Ghostbusters 2 came out, I believe.
Oh, look at that.
So it definitely is ignoring the film that came before it. I feel like, though, that film also was completely its own thing.
It's the weaker one.
Like, it would never have bun. But I don't think it was part of the original Ghostbusters canon. I think it created a brand new one as a reboot. The 2016 one.
Okay. I thought you were talking about part two. I was just like, yeah, it's like garbage.
Yes. But I feel like it wasn't that bad. It was darker.
It was darker. What are you talking about? How was it darker?
The second Ghostbusters?
People like singing "Oh, may all forgotten," or whatever they were singing, and Statue of Liberty moving around.
The villain was pretty dark.
Oh, he was just gnarly. It was
gnarly?
He was just a creepy, yeah.
I feel like, though, that this is now very much like the trend, which is not only retconning, but like taking things that are now like about 30 years or older and like showing where they are today. Right. Like we're getting Bill and Ted later on in the year and stuff. So people are like, it's this kind of weird thing too, where it's like, show me exactly what it is that this weird nostalgia where it's like they want what they had before, but like brand new. Mm. And this is definitely brand new. Right. It definitely has ignored not only the fact that the 2016 film came out, but the vibe of it, as we saw, said, this is a little like more serious and quirky in tone. It's not silly. It feels nothing like the 1984 Ghostbusters, mm-hmm. which I feel like the 2016 had more in common with in right. terms of tone.
Yeah.
So this feels more like I was thinking about buddy, that. Like it kind of feeling.
I was thinking, yeah, the first Ghostbusters was funny and it was quirky. I remember watching it and just like loving it as a kid. But I was also scared. Mm. For some reason, that one scared me. Mm-hmm. And I just found that whole world fascinating of just like, now there's a paranormal team taking care of all the ghosts in New York City.
Yeah.
I just thought that was interesting. And then like now looking at this too. So we always ask, is this something that we need? Do we need this? You know, we talk mm-hmm. about a variety of reboots and remakes and revivals. And sometimes it's not what we need, but sometimes what we want, like to see what has happened after all these times within these franchises that we invest in and that we love. True. Like in some ways that they're not. Sometimes we want things kind of stuck in time. And then within that moment, like this happened, it just stays there. But when they give this need to revive or this need to create something new from something old gives an opportunity for a growth within a franchise that we love and yes. opportunity to feel like, yeah, like we grew up with this, that this has grown itself too, that this in itself has also grown and also has brought upon a new generation.
Yeah. The only thing that makes me question, like, us, not even the movie, like, is us, is, like, what are we looking to revive? What are we looking to see again? Are we merely looking to see the costumes and the car? Or are we looking to feel the same things, like, the tone? Because it's such a different tone that I'm like Rolando said, this is a completely different film that doesn't even need the Ghostbusters moniker, but it's taking it.
Right.
So it's this brand new film with a completely different tone and energy about it. So we're not reviving that. We're not looking to feel the same way. Mm-hmm. But it looks and it's like doing all these callbacks. Oh, we haven't seen one of these in 30 years. Oh, and here's the costume. Oh, and here's the gun and here's the car.
Actually, interesting. So maybe it's not the tone is what's important there, but maybe it is about those kind of. Keep in mind, I think the original Ghostbusters, right? It's like blending comedy with like a little bit of element of not horror, but mm-hmm. like creep factor, right?
Yes.
And I think maybe this with a new tone, they're kind of figuring out how to introduce those elements again to a whole new generation.
Yeah.
I'm actually, it's a right, like I think as we do this podcast more and more, I'm kind of been leaning more towards this idea of just leave the franchise alone.
Yeah.
Let it go. Let it be. So I'm not necessarily like all gung ho for, this revival right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give it a chance. Now that I know, like, kind of Jason Reitman, a little bit of his background, I'm like, okay, cool. So he's actually like accomplished. So
he
he's
is
not like
no,
just
yeah.
like he's. It isn't just pure nepotism. Like I had just accused him blindly before.
He's a very competent filmmaker.
Not surprisingly.
No, not surprisingly.
Not surprisingly.
I just realized you had a Britney Spears shirt. I'm like, who is that staring at me?
But it is. I got my BS on the chest.
Yeah, but then you made a good point too, where it's just like. Or maybe, I forgot who made the point, but whoever it was
probably
made
me.
The good point.
It was probably me.
Of like, well then, if this feels like a completely different film, did we even need the Ghostbusters with it? Because it also feels, to me, it feels kind of devoid of the energy of the original one, which is neither a good or bad thing, it just simply is. So then I'm like, well, what are we going to get out of this?
Well, actually, what we may get out of this is actually seeing like a female Ghostbuster that doesn't feel like it's pandering. I think that was part
that
of
was the
problem
thing
for
of the
2016.
Yeah.
At least that was one of the critiques of it, but where here they are kind of putting a female character almost front and center, mm-hmm. but without seeming to make it a big deal because it's their kids.
Did you think that the 2016 was also pandering in the fact that like Melissa McCarthy is very much Bill Murray and that Kristen Wiig was very much kind of like the Dan Aykroyd character, and it was almost too similar in the sense where it was kind of like The Force Awakens, where it's like, well, here's the person who's supposed to be Luke Skywalker and here's the person who's supposed to be Han Solo, because what you want is familiarity.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
But I think, so it's interesting, right? Because I feel like we're going to cover this as a podcast when it comes out. It's going to be interesting to now watch this new property and then compare, not something that's not that old, right? Mm. Obviously, it would have been 4 years from when it, you know, when it came out, and seeing like how has it aged? Because 4 years in terms of media is a long time.
It is.
And seeing how other properties have tackled, you know, gender representation and showing different races and how they are portrayed. In those 4 years, like, we have seen, you know, Hollywood kind of like stumble, and then sometimes they execute it wonderfully. So it's curious to see what happens here. Here, interesting, the trailer. I haven't seen one black person. I haven't seen one person of color. I'm not calling them out. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying it's just like I have seen that. What? She's a girl, a white girl.
No, the in the beginning, the one with Finn Wolfhard.
Oh, was she of color?
Yeah.
Well, she a light, like a light skinned. I'm just saying.
Do you consider yourself a man of color?
Technically speaking, actually, I actually probably do consider myself more white than. I mean, obviously, I'm of Latinx ethnicity, but like, if you have culturally, I'm probably more white than anything.
Interesting.
Yeah, like for God's sakes, I listen to Britney Spears.
Yeah, he's true about that.
I'm wearing Britney Spears right now.
But you're also gay, Papa, so.
which is a good true. Point, right? So, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, you know, I think it would be interesting if we compared the 2016 to the 2020.
Okay.
And not even do the 1984. I don't know. I want audience input for this if you guys care to.
Yeah, let us know
your thoughts.
Yeah, let us know how you think we should tackle this this movie when it comes out.
Or what you want to hear. But, you know, in terms of not being able to let things go, there are movies out there that have, so many movies have been remade. So many have been rebooted. So many have been revived. And some haven't.
Some have not.
And we here, the three of us, think that there should be some movies that should be.
Yes.
So this is something a little different. We're going to talk about movies that we kind of want to see remade or mm-hmm. rebooted or revived.
Right.
So I'm kind of rethinking my choice.
Oh, are
you? Do you have one that you're like gung-ho on?
I've talked about this for like years now.
Yes.
Even before this podcast. I've been recommending people, writing letters to Hollywood and telling, which is like, why isn't this getting remade? So the movie that I would want remade is a 1998 movie starring Elijah Wood, Josh Hartnett, John Stewart, Liv Tyler. I'm pretty sure she's in it. Do you know what
the Faculty?
The Faculty, yes. Like my favorite, one of my favorite, like late 90s horror movies. Katie Holmes is not in this one, no. Busy Phillips, I think, is in it.
Bijou Phillips, yeah.
Bijou Phillips.
Yeah, I think it's Bijou.
Is it Bijou or Bizou?
Or Busy. No, Busy. Or is it Busy?
I think those are two different people.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Okay, let's see.
Salma Hayek is in it.
Well, it's Richard Robert Rodriguez, so you know, she would be.
So, I actually did not. I'm just learning right now that this is Robert Rodriguez.
Right now?
Just very, yeah, like Googling it. Did not know. This is one of my favorite horror, like, kind of. It's a parody. It's not a parody. It's almost it's like an homage to all these, you know, science fiction movies of like past,
yes,
with a little bit of horror elements into it. And
God, stuff. I gotta rewatch this again. I remember this movie.
Oh, this movie's so good. This movie is, I haven't seen it in a while. I don't know how it holds up.
For those who don't know what's it about.
Okay, yeah, so I'll tell you what the movie is about. So the Faculty is about these parasitic aliens that land in some small town in middle America.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the faculty of a high school. And it takes like this ragtag team of high school students. You have the jock, you have the nerd, you have the cheerleader, you have like the goth kid. You know, you have the
wait, girl. Can I describe this as Breakfast Club meets the Body Snatchers.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly that's basically how it was probably pitched.
Yeah.
And so these students, like, they have to kind of figure out how to work together because of all their differences to save the world. And there's also like some fake cocaine involved.
Ooh.
That's like the weapon that gets used.
Oh, is there like a scene like The Thing where they're like yes. giving everyone's fake yes, there blood? Is. Oh, I remember yeah. that scene.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is a movie that I think should get remade.
Mm-hmm.
But
why?
I actually think, well, here's why. I actually think because this, I think this movie would lend itself to be like a good series.
Hmm.
Like, I think this whole story, you could like stretch it out to be a whole season long thing.
Oh, that should, no, that would be yeah, really interesting. Right?
Like,
I gotta rewatch it again. I gotta see if it
hopefully
needs
Hollywood
it
is listening and they'll steal my idea. I will gladly let them steal this idea if it gets done.
Hmm.
And I think the reason I thought about it was actually because you guys know how MTV did Teen Wolf?
Yes.
Which was heavy on the homoeroticism.
Uh-huh.
So it'd be great to see something like that with the faculty also just like really exploit
interesting you know,
young, supple bodies.
Yeah. Should Robert Rodriguez direct it?
I would. You know what? He did such a good job with this.
I would
yeah,
like
he
to
should.
See
he
him
should come back.
I mean, he kind of did that with his own film, or he revived his own properties.
Which ones?
Desperado, El Mariachi, and then Desperado, Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
But those are sequels.
Well, yeah, but they were still like he. It took him many years.
Yeah, that's true.
You good?
I'm just texting someone.
Yeah. Do you have one, Eddie?
Yes, I do.
Okay, cool.
So yeah, so that is my pick.
Oh, good choice.
Thank you, yeah. Eddie.
Okay, interesting. Falling into the theme of high school.
Oh boy.
I did not choose a movie. Actually, I chose a show.
Ooh.
Called Tower Prep. Tower Prep is a Canadian American live action television series that was on the Cartoon Network.
Uh huh.
And it was created by Paul Dini.
Okay,
which I talked about. Yeah, he's the one, like, he does, like, produce, write, animates, like, for all these DC, Superman,
uh-huh.
Batman stuff.
So you remember Mask of the Phantasm?
Yes.
And it's a Marvel
Batman episode. That is, yeah.
Yeah, so he's amazing. He just has this long line of credits of just things that he's created and been part of.
Uh-huh.
So this was his creation. And basically the basis of this show is... It's a preparatory high school where all the students there have a special ability. So it's similar to think of like what X-Men was, like Charles Xavier's School for Gifted Children. Well, all the kids here have a special ability, and it could range from being able to see in the dark to be able to mimic any voice that you hear, or a girl who can read body language so perfect that she can just read people.
Mm.
The main character has this strange ability called Preflex, where he can anticipate any attack or movement towards him. He already sees it in his head and can react. Not react, but mm-hmm. act
okay.
Towards it. So so the thing about these students is that none of them ever decided to come to the school. All the students are kidnapped.
Oh,
so
interesting.
They're found out that they have an ability, and some strange... source kidnaps them and brings them to this unknown location. Mm. They don't know where the high school is actually located. There is a wall surrounding the grounds of the high school.
Okay.
And if you try to depart, you will be punished.
So this was in Cartoon Network, you said?
This was in Cartoon Network.
But
this
it's
was
live action.
This is a live action. This was their attempt for kind of a live action family show.
Because uh-huh.
they tracked both, like, you know, the whole family.
How old is the show?
This show came out in 2010.
Oh, so
it's
not
October
that old.
2010.
Okay.
It had one season, 13 episodes.
Uh-huh.
They didn't make it the second season. I actually found it by accident because I was reading an article on, like, good shows that didn't get a chance or
okay.
had a lot of potential. And then I could not find it anywhere. Cartoon Network was not... syndicating, streaming any
like
episodes, or yeah, not
streaming,
but not
like
showing
any
its episodes. I had my buddy Soso kind of like scroll the internet until he actually found like a website that had them, and
wow.
I was able to watch it, and I loved this. Oh my god, this was really good in the sense of like plot. It had this heavy sense of mystery, like the kids trying to figure out, like the four main kids are trying to figure out like what's the school about, where are they, why can't they see their you know families, why are they kidnapped. and stuff like that. And this presence of like, if you fall out of line, you'd be severely punished. There's this like, there's this place that they scare you with, like, oh, if you get out of line, you're gonna go to this building E, and like everyone's terrified of building E because kids who go there, they don't come back okay. So it's like this kind of mystery.
So why would you want to see this? How would you? Well, I guess it's for 2009, right? So technically speaking, you could see this either as a revival or a remake.
What would you want?
No, I would want a remake. I want it definitely kind of like put in this kind of timeline, kind of hinting to similar, because it gives a hint that all these kids are being prepared to work for some government.
Okay.
At some capacity, like spies of some sort. Uh-huh. It kind of hints to that. They're trained, they're well-educated, and they're well-trained to, when time comes, they're going to be part of something.
So
they just don't know what that is.
And the reason you want that as a remake?
Because it adds the mystery. I think it likes, well, you know, we're still fascinated and probably still saturated with the whole superpower. Uh-huh. But this is subtle. Mm-hmm. You know, these are not like Avengers. These are just kids with a little ability, and they're kind of trapped in this mystery, and they're just trying to figure it out.
Aww. Interesting.
You know, so I think that would just be, I think, something that would just gravitate to viewers.
Okay.
Today.
It's definitely probably something that our audience has never heard about. So hopefully you guys check it out, look it up.
Tower Prep. You could find it in iTunes. iTunes has all the episodes.
Oh. Now. iTunes costs money.
This is like $5 to get the season.
Oh, for the season. Okay.
Yeah, I think
oh,
the that's season. Not bad. I think, yeah, for the season, you can get it for $5.
And then it's interesting. Wow, I never heard of it.
Yeah, me neither.
The picture is fascinating.
So the thing was, it was a little low quality, and the fight scenes were a little murky.
It actually sounds like the best, like, when it's a low quality.
But but the plots, the story was really interesting.
I see.
It's, yeah. Okay.
So I always think about Tower Prep would be a good show to remake.
Interesting. So Nicole, what do you got?
Oh, we'll be sure to put links to this stuff too on the show notes for anyone who is interested in this.
For sure.
So, you know, we're in this day and age where I feel like people are okay with musicals again.
Oh.
Cats is coming out later this year.
Yeah. Wait, hang on. You're right. It's going to be out later this year. Predictions. Do you think it's going to bomb?
I think it's going to bomb.
Bomb. Eddie?
I don't know. I'm going to be surprised.
Okay. You're too kind.
Yeah. I am too kind.
I think it's going to bomb also.
I think it's going to flop. Yeah. Yeah. But In the Heights is coming out next year. And a remake of a beloved musical called West Side Story is also coming out next year.
Do you think that's going to bomb? I think that's
going to bomb. I don't know. I have to see the trailer. I mean, because it's interesting, because even though I think West Side Story is a wonderful film, it wasn't appropriately casted.
Well.
And there are things that could have been changed about it that, you know, other people might be more offended about, and I can't tell them they're wrong about that.
No.
So I mean it's being directed by a white man who doesn't have any musical theater background, unlike the original film, but that's a whole different story.
Ooh.
But cats. It got me thinking about films, old movie musicals that were clearly done wrong that should be remade.
Okay.
First on my mind came Guys and Dolls, which is not a bad film, but would be just a treat to be remade, because the original Guys and Dolls is just simply okay, and it's a really great musical. But I'm not going to do Guys and Dolls. I'm going to do a film that actually kind of deserves it. It's the Rodgers and Hammerstein musical, The King and I. Mm. And the original film of The King and I came out in, I believe, 1953.
Wait, pardon? Is that the one with Rita Moreno?
Yes.
Okay.
So in terms of casting, it is unfortunately highly offensive to people, because Yul Brynner plays the King of Siam, who was not of Thai, or I don't think he was of Asian descent. I don't quite know what Yul Brynner was, but I could tell you for sure he wasn't Thai.
Was he like Czech, or like, I guess probably Soviet back then?
Let's look at what Mr.
Yul Brynner from Magnificent Seven, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Yul Brynner. Oh, he was Russian-born. Yeah, I was right.
Russian-born. So he's Russian, yeah.
Russian-born.
Rita Moreno is in it also, who is not of any Asian descent that I know of.
Right.
And it's just, so most of the people who are quote-unquote the other in this film are not appropriately casted.
Okay.
And then even then, the person who plays Anna is played by Deborah Kerr. And as much as Deborah Kerr is a great actress, she was dubbed by Marnie Nixon, who also dubbed Natalie Wood in West Side Story, who also dubbed Audrey Hepburn in My Fair Lady.
Wait, Natalie Wood was dubbed?
Mm-hmm.
In West Side Story?
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that. I actually genuinely thought that was her voice.
No.
Wow.
No, no, no.
Did you know this, Eddie?
No.
We just saw this recently. Why didn't no one tell me this? I'm just supposed to find out on my own? Do research?
In fact, Tony was also dubbed.
That I can see.
Okay. That was the shocker for me because I thought that was Richard Boehmer's voice.
Wait, but was the little shorter blonde guy, was he dubbed?
Little shorter blonde guy.
The Sharks. From Sharks. From, yeah, like from his team.
From the Sharks or from the Jets?
The Jets.
The Tony's Jets. Best friend.
Riff. Riff. So interestingly enough, Riff was dubbed in the Jet song, not in G Officer Krumke. And he was dubbed in the Jet song by the actor who played Ice, who sings Cool.
Oh.
So if you listen to it, you're like, that's Ice's voice.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know. Okay.
Yeah. Also, Rita Moreno was not dubbed in America, but she was dubbed in A Boy Like That because she couldn't hit those notes.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a hard, that's also one of my favorite songs.
That's a great song. Yeah.
I've made the argument that the reason she won the Oscar is probably for that song.
For that performance. Well, I mean, she gave face for it, but
sure,
she didn't
but
give
it's
voice.
Not the voice. She's not like, oh, I love you. That's basically the notes they're hitting right there. That's such a good song.
Well, no, I think what got her the Oscar was the rape scene.
Oh, the implied true. Rape I mean, scene. That's another book. The movie's fucking good. We're not talking about West Side Story. Yeah. We're talking about
The King and I.
The King and I.
The King and I, for those who don't know, is about a woman, an English woman, Anna, who is sent to Siam in 1862 with her young son to teach the King of Siam's children. He has many, many children. And the whole thing is the cultural difference between the two, between English Western life and Siamese Eastern life.
Mm.
And this beautiful friendship between Anna and the king starts to form.
Oh, and it was, isn't that a movie? Anna
there
and
is,
king?
Yeah, a okay. not musical called Anna and the King, because it's a great story.
Okay.
It's,
Jodie Foster.
Yes, and it's also a very unique love story because even though they never really kiss or they don't fuck, they have this love for each other that is also an underrated love story where they really just appreciate people as humans, you know,
right.
Even though there is like this great moment of sexual tension and Shall We Dance and stuff. So I think they could take advantage of the appropriate casting, like, you know, seeing Mulan and stuff. I'm like, oh, think of all the other films that they can now do like again and make it appropriate.
Right.
And then just like the production design in the 50s was great, but they could improve upon that. Mm-hmm. And I just really feel like tell the story a little bit better because I think they were really going for the love story aspect in the original. Mm-hmm. And I think they should just make it more of like respect love story.
Do you think if Hollywood they remake would do it. That like now? Like,
I think we're of the mindsets that we can handle it.
I don't know. I feel like Hollywood would just like steer towards a romance.
I hope not.
I'm just saying.
But, I mean, I'm also biased because I saw a revival of this show at the Lincoln Center Theater a couple of years ago with Ken Watanabe and Kelly O'Hara. And it's probably the best production I've ever seen in my life.
Wait, Catherine O'Hara?
Kelly O'Hara.
Oh.
No. Catherine O'Hara as Anna.
I'm just thinking of Moira from Schitt's Creek now in that role.
Yeah, that would actually be really funny. But yeah, so I mean, but there's a tons of musicals that could get updates, you know, like Family Opera was a bad movie. Evita, another one. Well, Evita's crap.
So. You, the Madonna movie?
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, I don't mind Madonna in it.
I've never seen it. I just know the song, good. Don't Cry For Me, Argentina.
It's a great song. The truth.
With Antonio Banderas as like the dictator, right?
Yeah, he plays kind of like the Che Guevara character.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's just a bunch of musicals. Actually, one of the greatest musicals of all time, A Little Night Music, was so poorly made into a film in the 70s with Elizabeth Taylor, and that if it ever gets remade, needs to be done appropriately. So there's, I could go on, but I think mostly for a movie that people would actually see, it should be The King and I.
And then The King. Oh, The King and I.
The King and I, yeah. It's a great musical. Do you know the songs?
Mm.
Getting to Know You, Getting to Know All.
Oh, I do know that song, okay.
You, or Shall We Dance on a Bright Cloud of Music, Shall We Fly?
That
shall
sounds exactly we dance? The song that you just sing.
No, this is a completely different song.
Okay.
Or how about, whenever I feel afraid, I hold my head erect and whistle a happy tune so no one ever knows I'm afraid. No? Okay. Or how about, just sing you the entire soundtrack. But yeah.
That could be its own episode.
Yeah.
Performances by Nicole.
Yeah, or, you know, I mean, whatever, I'm not going to go on. But these are some of the movies that I want to see.
Do you have dream casting?
I think Ken Watanabe did a great job that I would have him again. For Anna, who could do like that old like 1860s woman, Emily Blunt?
Ooh, can she sing?
Yes.
You saw Mary Poppins. Oh, we covered it.
Jesus.
How quickly you forget. Oh, another recent musical.
Yeah.
The musicals are alive.
Fair enough. Oh, but yeah, so what does that mean? Like, do you think, so who do you think they'll get to write the Lady Gaga?
Wait, what?
Coming in, like, what's it called? What is it? You have the same music, but you're kind of like recomposing or reorchestrating, kind of.
Rearranging?
It, thank you, rearranging.
Have Lady Gaga do the arrangements?
Yes.
That would be interesting. I wouldn't go see that.
Okay.
But
speaking of musicals, she's also going to be, isn't she like in talks to be in
Little Shop of Horrors?
Little Shop of Horrors.
Yes.
But not as a plant.
No, as Audrey. As Audrey.
As Audrey. Yeah. I don't know if I can see her as Audrey.
Seriously, I can. Totally.
I can see her as Audrey.
I actually would prefer her to be Audrey too.
I mean, yeah, I would prefer a not black person to be Audrey too, and have a black person be in a role that's not like the backup singers or the plant.
True.
That's what I would prefer. But I don't think Little Shop of Hearts needs to be remade.
Oh. It would be the second remake.
Yeah, it would. Yeah. Well, this would be technically no, because Little Shop of Horrors was an adaptation that then became a movie, kind of like Hairspray.
Oh.
You know, like even though it's the second film version of Hairspray, they're actually kind of different because it's a film version of the musical adaptation.
Oh, interesting.
You know what I mean?
Gotcha. So this is going to be a remake of the
musical.
The Rick Moranis one.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. We're all learning something. Oh, yeah. This is the Rick Moranis episode, basically.
Yeah.
We've said his name more than I've ever said in my life, to be honest.
Come back.
We need you, Rick Moranis. Come back.
Suddenly see
more. Aw. I love that song. Yeah.
But what about you guys? Tell us what you think. Are there remakes or reboots that you would love to see that Hollywood hasn't, you know, defiled yet?
Yeah.
Let us know. Where can they let us know, Nicole?
You can email us remakesreboots revivals@gmail.com, or you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/remakesreboots and revivals. We're also on Podbean and wherever you listen to podcasts, really. Spotify, iTunes, iHeart Radio.
We are.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, I forgot what that platform is called because I don't use it.
iHeart. I think it is radio still. The iHeart Radio app.
Yeah.
We're not on radio though, but I guess
not yet.
Podcasts.
But yeah. And check out our fundraiser if you haven't yet.
Yes. Please donate. Any little bit helps. Right now we are at 25% of our goal.
About, yeah. Yeah. Just
more or less.
So.
Which is more than I expected, to be honest. So.
This quickly.
Yeah.
Because we're going to be up for another month or so.
More or less, yes.
Yes. So happy holidays, guys. Thank you to those who contributed so far.
Thank you, guys. Yes. As in next week, what are we bringing?
Black Christmas.
I remember the aughts version is like one of the worst movies I've ever seen, and I cannot wait to talk about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I can wait. So until then,
stay an original.